So as I'm kind of looking through the fine wine stuff, obviously, when you look at the performance versus the S&P, like through good times and bad, it outperforms during good times, and it the drawdown is substantially less during the bad times.
Luke looks like a guy who had, like, you know, a 12-inch subwoofer in his trunk in high school.
I had 412s.
Are you serious?
I had two amps and 412s.
In what? Like a pickup truck? Like, what were you driving?
Yeah, Volkswagen Jetta.
In a Jetta! It's a sorority girl car.
I had 2,000 watts.
Dude.
Going back there to 412-inch subs. You can hear me from 5 miles away.
Oh, my Lord. We got to stop talking about this. You just scared me. Who loves EVs more? Liberals or conservatives?
Liberals.
Okay. And who probably owns more Tesla in their portfolio? Liberals or conservatives?
Conservatives.
You think so? Only because they have more money.
Yes. Exactly.
All right. Let's go with a higher percentage in their portfolio.
All right.
I'm going to go with liberals on that one.
There we go.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi owns like $7 million worth of something crazy.
Correct. Now,
where'd you get the tip from, though?
Now, who wants to raise taxes more? Liberals or conservatives?
Liberals.
All right. So did Elon just look at the liberals and say, hey, watch what I'm about to do to your stock holdings? Thanks for joining us for today's episode of the Laryngitis Show.
Don't blame it on me, though.
You gave it to me, but someone gave it to you.
Right.
And yeah,
I wasn't the first, though.
Runs around the office, man. It runs around the office. Derek is
safe.
So
I'm about to get it. Huh?
Derek is definitely. Derek's sandwiched in between us right now. Awesome. He will have it in no time.
You're absolutely screwed, dude.
I was wondering, is this like the Echo variant of COVID? See what I did there? Echo?
I like that.
You like that? Isn't laryngitis?
There's no C? There's no like... Oh, wait.
We went to Delta, so we're at D.
Right,
and E Echo?
Right.
And all of a sudden, everyone's got laryngitis?
Why didn't we have a C? Wasn't there like a beta version or something like that? Maybe Alpha? There was an Alpha, and there was like a B.
Yeah.
Why did we skip C?
Was that Charlie?
Yeah. If you're talking about...
Alpha Bravo Charlie?
Yep.
Starting to think Charlie. It's all made up.
Yeah. Yep. All right, so no, actually, this is the Capitalist Investor, episode 101.
101.
We blew past 100, and now we got our 101 episode for you. So today, we're going to talk about, we got three topics I want to cover. So I think we should start with Elon Musk, okay, because he tweeted out that he might sell 10% of his Tesla stock. And Tesla's stock kind of cratered after he did that.
I think it cratered 10%. So it's funny, he's selling 10%. The stock is down 10%.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. After we talk about that, I do want to hit on Zillow, which got into home flipping. I don't know exactly when it was, but kind of recently. And then all of a sudden they pulled a 180 on it.
Mm-hmm.
They got right out of it. Didn't seem, you know, it was very asset heavy, which is not consistent with their normal asset-light business model. So I want to talk a little bit about that. And then I want to wrap up today's show with talking a little bit about private alternative investing. And I want to focus today's conversation on fine art and fine wine. It's not something everyone's going to invest in, but at the same point in time, both of those are available to any individual in America to invest in. It's not like you have to be accredited or a qualified purchaser, which means you got a net worth of over $1 million or $5 million. Like, you could have $10,000 in your bank account or in your savings, and you could decide that you're going to take that $10,000 and you're going to buy some fine wine with it, or you're going to buy a painting. So I want to touch on that topic third.
The game's changed. I mean, if you look back 10 years ago, none of that was available to individual investors. So I'm excited to talk about that.
That should be fun, and I've got some good stats to kind of run through everyone with that. All right, so let's kick it off with Elon Musk. So I think this was in response to Congress's back and forth on taxing unrealized capital gains.
Craziness.
Which is stupid, and they're not going to do it as of now. It seems like they've backpedaled on that, but Elon Musk, he likes to ruffle feathers, and I kind of like that about him.
Yes, for sure.
I like it about him. So he puts out there that he's thinking about, well, D, you mentioned it last week. What He said he was willing to give $7 or $8 billion to whoever to fix the world hunger crisis as long as they gave him a plan.
Yeah, it was beautiful. So, yeah, I think it was CNN. Some reporter tweeted that, hey, if we had six, you know, all these billionaires, they're the problem. If we just had $6 billion, we could end world hunger. And like 3 minutes later, Elon's like, all right, sweet. You know, I got $6 billion. I'll sell the stock right now. You just go ahead and tell me how that's going to fix it. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, I don't know what to do. It's just backpedaling a mile a minute because obviously that would not solve world hunger. There's a lot more issues going on there. So he's always on top of things, calling out the trolls.
Yep.
Well, when you're worth, what, $300 billion, I don't think you care anymore. Like, you literally don't care what you say, what you do. Like, at that point, like, you're the man.
But the thing I love about Elon is he's willing to take a short-term beatdown. Because he lost $50 billion of net worth in 2 days over this beatdown. But he's proven that he's done this before. I'm going to invest in Bitcoin. Hey, we're no longer going to accept Bitcoin as payments.
Taking Tesla private at 420.
Dude, he does this a lot.
Funding secured.
And it always works for him, right? Mm-hmm. So I think this was a big middle finger to Congress.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and they deserve it, honestly. It's a ridiculous – it doesn't even make sense. You know, I don't want to get too far into – you know, accounting and stuff like that. But taxation is based on cash flows, right?
Yep.
So if you buy a share of stock for $100 and it grows to $200 and you don't sell it, there's no taxation on that $100, right? Because what if the value of that stock goes back down to $100? Looks like Luke has something he wants to jump in on.
Well, the other theory is that Musk wants to sell 10% of his stock to cover his tax burden, right? So he's got a large tax burden coming because apparently he's got a ton of stock options that come execute here soon. And he's going to owe roughly, or he's going to make $27 billion. So you pay 50% taxes on that. That's like a $13 billion tax bill, right? So the theory is there's a possibility that he doesn't care that he's selling 10% of the stock. He put it out there because he knew it was going to be sell 10% of your stock, and he wants to sell 10% of the stock.
And I'm going to give you another piece of information, some food for thought on that with regards to Michael Burry's tweet. Do you guys remember Michael Burry from The Big Short?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite
Christian
movies.
Bale.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Total weirdo. I think he might be autistic.
I heard he only invests in water now, H2O. That's what the movie ended in.
Really?
Yeah. The movie, if you watch the movie, the end,
he nailed the trade. I don't know that he's ever nailed another one after that, but he did come after Elon Musk. Yeah. And he came after Elon for basically Elon has taken advantage of a tax loophole for the rich in that rather than taking a salary where he'd have to pay ordinary income tax on it or exercising stock options and liquidating the stock and all that stuff, which all trigger taxable events, he's been posting his Tesla stock as collateral, and Tesla has been paying him in basically a personal loan, which is tax-free.
Right.
So what Michael Burry pointed out is like, yeah, maybe this isn't just about the big middle finger to Congress. Maybe this is also, you know, what's the saying? The roosters come home to roost, or I don't know.
Something like that.
Something
chickens
like that.
Come home
know.
To roost.
We're not always, chickens come, I don't know, whatever.
Who knows?
We're not always good with those idioms. Sometimes we nail like four or five
You're
in a row.
You're pretty good, Mark. I mean, Mark I am really bad at them. Don't you have a book? Like the best metaphors or idioms out there?
You know what? I bought it a long time ago and I started flipping through it and they were lame. They weren't as good as when the chickens come home to roost or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah,
rising tide lifts all boats.
It's still my favorite.
Every time I try to do something like that, I really fail and it sounds really bad.
You run the risk anytime you try to use an idiom. Yeah. And I just failed miserably myself.
It wasn't bad.
But, you know, I'm going to shrug it off. So, all right. So anyway, so Michael Burry's basically saying like maybe it's time for him to repay those personal loans.
Right.
I mean, especially with Tesla being a $1 trillion company, maybe it's time for him to repay.
Right.
Right. Beyond that, here's one thing I want you guys to consider. Who loves EVs more? Liberals or conservatives?
Liberals.
Okay. And who probably owns more Tesla in their portfolio? Liberals or conservatives?
Conservatives.
You think so? Only because they have more money.
Yes, exactly.
All right, let's go with a higher percentage in their portfolios.
All right.
I'm going to go with liberals on that one.
There we go.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi owns like $7 million worth or something crazy.
Correct. Now,
where'd you get the tip from, though?
Now, who wants to raise taxes more, liberals or conservatives?
Liberals.
All right. So did Elon just look at the liberals and say, hey, watch what I'm about to do to your stock holdings? Mm-hmm. Like, I think he did that. I think that is exactly what he did. Like, hey, all of you liberals who probably have 10% or maybe more of your money invested in my company's stock, let me show you what it looks like when you when you start taxing stuff you're not supposed to be taxing.
That's actually a good theory, Mark. I don't think anybody talked about that.
That's brilliant, honestly.
I nailed it.
Wow. My mind is blown right now.
Mic drop.
I'm going to steal that.
Mark. Yeah. Mic drop.
That's exactly, that's probably what happened. But it also brings up a great point, right? Not only Elon Musk owns Tesla stock, right? Non-rich people own Tesla stock.
Yes. There's people with $2,000 in a Robinhood account that own
Tesla. I mean, it's one of the biggest Tesla meme stocks out there. So you got to think the Robinhood traders are on that. But, you know, talking about Robinhood, Elon Musk, there's always a method to his madness. Like what, you know, there's the issue at front that he's trying to solve is never the true issue. There's always something in the back of his head he's trying to put out there and solve, right? So what I would love to see is him to maybe sell some of this Tesla stock. And if he does, you know, sell 10% of Tesla stock, reallocate that to maybe a new project. Because everything Elon Musk touches turns into gold.
It all turns to gold.
Because he knows how to allocate capital. We talked about, I think, last episode on our 100th episode about how private entities and people like Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk are able to allocate capital better than the government. I would love to see him start new projects. I mean, he's working on SpaceX. He's working on the Mind Link to the computer. What's it called?
I don't know.
It's something like Link, right? Yeah. So where he's trying to connect our brains to essentially artificial intelligence and computers. I mean, I would love to see his next idea because it gets me excited.
Yeah. Have you guys ever watched Big Brother?
I don't think I've seen
that.
Not
really, no.
All right, so you put like these 20 randos in a house together and they stab each other in the back and compete in these competitions. And sometimes you throw a competition because the point I'm trying to make is the winner of Big Brother is always that person who can think 3 to 4 steps ahead. Mm-hmm. Like, if I do this, here's the immediate consequence. But then there's a ripple effect that leads to this consequence and that consequence, and here's my end result, and this is the best path for me. Elon Musk would win
That's the perfect example of how Elon Musk thinks.
He would win at that game. Yeah. He's thinking 3 to 4 steps ahead of everyone else.
Yep. That's why he wins.
That's why he's the richest guy in the world.
That's right.
Hey, and I got to mention this because I found this when I was looking this stuff up. I did hear Elon sold all of his houses. I figured that was kind of like not 100% true. But apparently he sold all of his houses and he lives in a 400 square foot unit on the SpaceX lot.
Well, he doesn't care about materialistic things. He's all about
where's the SpaceX lot? Is that California or Texas?
Texas, right?
I think so, yeah.
So is he really sleeping in the 400 square
foot? I saw a picture of it, man.
Oh,
it's pretty small.
That's crazy.
Like, I don't think any of us could live in that, man. Like,
it's like the size of my office.
Yeah. Like, that's small.
But Elon Musk doesn't
sleep. I slept on that couch before. Well,
Elon Musk doesn't sleep. I'm pretty sure he gets like 4 hours of sleep a night. He like works 20 hours a day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's really, I guarantee he's never in that.
Yep. Yeah.
He's in his office, probably passed out.
That's crazy. That's dedication right there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's enough fun talking about Elon Musk. Let's move on to the next topic, which is Zillow. Who wants to take the lead and provide the deets to our listeners?
Well, essentially, Zillow is getting out of the house flipping business like Mark was alluding to. And this is all based on the fact that the Zestimate, which is the mathematical model they use to estimate the price of houses, is very flawed. And they've learned that they cannot accurately predict the cost of a home because it's just so much different in all the different parts of the country, depending on what's wrong with the house, what's, accessories the house has. Like, for example, my house has a little bar out back. Like, this estimate does not take into account any of this stuff. So essentially, they were buying up homes.
The weird thing is the listing price on Zillow is always right around that damn Zestimate
because people always are looking at it.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know about you, Mark. I mean, I just bought a house 7 months ago, and I'm on Zillow every month or so, or even every week.
I like to check because, look, I own D.R. Horton. Like, as a company, we invest in home build. Like, we need to understand the themes that are at play. So trying to figure out available inventory, and for me to log into Zillow and see that at this time last year, no houses, you didn't see any price reductions. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden prices are getting reduced.
Yeah.
So the dynamic has changed. So I'm looking all the time, you know, around here. I mean, I'm looking up other places.
I hope this estimate's correct on my house, man, because I would make like 25% in like 7 months. I mean, that's not a bad return.
That's not bad at all,
but,
man.
But I don't think it is accurate, and that's why Zillow's closing down that side of the business, and they are taking a big loss on the properties that they purchased.
So they're done with the – are they still going to provide this estimate?
Yeah, that's the thing. They trademarked that back in 2006.
Okay.
That's been around for 15 years. They're not going to get rid of that. If they got rid of that, people would stop visiting the website.
Yeah.
That's their main driver to the website. So they need that. But this is kind of a telltale sign that people are losing faith in that system of estimating houses. And that's why Zillow stock crashed, you know, what, like 70% from the top.
Yeah. But I've also heard a lot of people say, and I don't own any, nor do we as a firm. But I also heard some people say, like, why wouldn't you buy Zillow stock right now? They just cleanse themselves of the piece of the business that nobody wanted to touch, the asset heavy, capital intensive side of the business.
Yeah.
And now you've got the asset light business that everyone loved.
Well, because they don't want to own the stock because they're worried that the future of the housing market, this is maybe the start of the turnaround from the peak, right? So that's what people are worried about.
And so just to quickly touch on that, I think home appreciation is still going to be positive,
mm-hmm.
but it's not going to grow 25% or whatever it did over the course of the last 2 years. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're probably looking at mid single digits again, which that's where it should be.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I think Luke is right. I think a lot of people are kind of using this as, you know, maybe a sign that maybe this giant bull run in the housing market is finally coming to a close. And I think that Zillow internally, I think they basically figured out that no matter what they do, they can't accurately predict these prices because there's just too many variables, and the time that it takes is more than they thought it was going to make this division of their business profitable.
Well, houses are a lot more complicated than other items, right? So we use technology to solve all kinds of different problems and issues around the world. And I don't have a problem with, you know, us trying to use artificial intelligence and technology to try to predict future home prices. But this is very similar to what, you know, Carvana, KBB, Kelley Blue Book does with cars.
Right.
The only thing is cars aren't as complicated as houses, and they're not as expensive as houses. So,
right.
You know, when you take a look at it from that side of the business, you know, Carvana could still be a good investment. It doesn't mean that anything's flawed with that. It just means that houses are very much more complicated.
Luke looks like a guy who had, like, you know, a 12-inch subwoofer in his trunk in high school.
I had four 12s.
Are you serious?
I had two amps and four 12s.
In what? Like a pickup truck? Like, what were you driving?
Yeah, Volkswagen Jetta.
In a Jetta! It's a sorority girl car.
I had 2,000 watts.
Dude.
Going back there to 412-inch subs. You could hear me from 5 miles away.
Oh, my Lord. We got to stop talking about this. You just scared me.
My lights dimmed every time the bass hit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
That's amazing. I had a system in my car and it caught the back seat on fire one time. I had a live wire in my Buick. But I have a... It was this awful car. Eventually, the door stopped closing.
How did you call that, D? How did you, like, know that?
You just look like a kind of guy that would do that.
Oh, God, I love it.
I take that as a good thing.
All right, let's move on from Zillow. Let's get into alternative investments. We're focusing on collectibles, you know, basically fine art, fine wine. I see we've got NFTs thrown in here. I don't want to spend too much time on NFTs. We can briefly touch on them because we did our comprehensive NFT show,
mm-hmm.
although kind of came with an unfortunate result for our guest speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like his account actually ended up getting hacked and
yes.
his best piece was stolen from him.
Mm-hmm. An ape. It was 140,000, something like that.
Oof.
That sucks.
Yeah, it was bad.
And you would think like the whole blockchain technology, crypto, like NFT, like that, it's supposed to like not allow that kind of stuff to happen, right? There should be a ledger of like where it goes from one to the next.
But once it goes one place, you can't take it back. That's why blockchain's so efficient.
The thumb drive in the landfill example?
Right, well, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. But that's decentralizing it though, right? We have another buddy who learned that the hard way.
Yes.
Oh, man. Good stuff. All right. So let's start off with... all right. So fine art and fine wine, right? So you look at those two categories of investments. And look, this is not for everyone, although it could potentially be for everyone, right? So when I start to think about who should really begin to look at investing in alternative investments, I typically think of people that have $1 million+. Because you could allocate 10% of your portfolio or 100 grand to a few different alternative strategies. Mm-hmm. You know, a third, art, a third to wine, and a third to maybe like a hedge fund or a private real estate investment or something like that, right?
Classic cars.
Yeah, there you go. So that's, I think that's kind of where I've normally seen this in the past, although investing in these collectibles has really been democratized. So it's available to every single person, mm-hmm. right? And if you're sitting there with $10,000 in your bank account and you're wondering, what should I do with it? You could certainly invest in either of these categories. Now, as we start talking about how the categories work, I think you're going to come to realize that the people that make the most money investing in these categories are working with deep pockets because the returns are higher the more money you have invested in these categories, because you, all of a sudden, I mean, if you think about it, let's say you've got $1 million to play with in the fine art world, right? You're going to gain admission to art shows that someone like me who has zero interest in investing in fine art, and I currently have a zero allocation to fine art, and I will always have a zero like they're not going to let me in, right? Because they know I'm not a player in that business.
Yeah, I could never see you walking around like a museum or anything looking at our art mark. That's just not
like,
you, man.
Like with a martini with my pinky up?
Yeah, I cannot see that mark. That's
yeah,
not
I'm
you.
Not going to do that.
But look at the stats, though. I mean, fine wine, it's yielded 13.6% over the past 15 years. Arts return an average of 7.5%, you know, over the past 10 to 15 years.
Yep.
I mean, that's good returns for diversification in your portfolio, right? So you're reducing that risk. And you're basically implementing a new asset class that nobody even owns right now.
And it doesn't correlate with all the other stuff you own. And people, you know, man, we get asked this on Fox all the time. Like, well, what's a good inflation hedge? Gold? Maybe crypto? Crypto's kind of holding up well. And then you look at these kind of things. Mm. Like a good Bordeaux or something like that, right? I mean, that is going to hold its value and then some.
Well, the best part about it is you don't really need to know what you're buying, right? So most of the time before, when you're buying fine art or fine wine, you would need to be very knowledgeable in the topic, know exactly what you're buying, what you're looking for when you're going to buy it. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go into it. When you use, you know, these, you know, apps that are like Robinhood essentially for fine wine and fine art, they kind of do all the work for you and you just got to allocate some money and you're going to get some of the return because they're diversifying you already.
Yep. So as I'm kind of looking through the fine wine stuff, obviously, when you look at the performance versus the S&P, like through good times and bad, it outperforms during good times, and the drawdown is substantially less during the bad times, mm-hmm. which is a little counterintuitive. I could understand beer sales going up during a recession,
yeah,
but people investing in fine wine, that was a little counterintuitive to me, but... These are the stats, man. I mean, it's definitely a pretty solid hedge against recessions.
I mean, art was $50 billion in sales last year. I mean, that's a lot of money.
That is a lot, man.
And it's projected to grow a lot really quick as well. So,
yeah.
I mean, that could be at $100 billion 10 years from now.
Dude, check out fine wine's correlation to different asset classes. Now, I'm used to looking like, all right, let's U.S. equities to U.K. equities. There's a 74% correlation. They kind of move in tandem, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to vary because we have different economies and stuff like that, but they pretty much, for the most part, move in tandem. So when I look at these correlation tables, I'm more used to seeing 50%+ numbers,
right?
We'll look at fine wine versus U.S. equities, 6.9% correlation.
Wow.
Nothing. Asia equities, 4.4%. UK, 4.4%. Oil, 8.5%. Gold, 1.3%. And gold's supposed to be an inflation. Like, it is the most perfectly non-correlated asset class I've ever seen.
So fine wine's most correlated with oil.
Barely.
Mean, that's crazy.
Barely.
Exactly.
See, my problem investing in fine wine is I couldn't have it in my house. I drink it.
That's what I was just about
to say. That's a problem. Yeah. But that's why
buddy actually texted me. He's like, Luke, we should start like a wine cellar in your basement. I'm like, that's a great idea. I'm like, wait, no, it's not, because you would be down there drinking my bottles of wine.
Yeah.
So the problem is not necessarily me. It's my buddies.
Yeah, you got to watch out for them.
They'd be down there just like, you know, after a couple beers, and they just
tell them to bring their wine cellar and Miller Lite when they come over.
Yeah, how about Mad Dog 2020?
It's a little church.
Let's go back to the Mad Dog 2020 days,
the college days.
Oh yeah, but good experiences with Mad Dog 2020. We won't talk about
what about Four Locos.
That was after my time. Yeah, wow. I was a Mad Dog 2020 guy.
So you're just showing your age again.
When I had $4 to my name on a Friday night, it went to the Mad Dog Fund.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never get to experience the real Four Locos, the ones with caffeine and alcohol, the ones that actually.
They stopped making those.
Yeah, because it's too dangerous.
Now, right?
Yeah. But anyway, fun stuff.
But right. So, you know, back to the investing portion of it. I just had a client meeting this morning, right? And we're the 60-40 portfolio days, those are long dead and gone. And especially nowadays when the bond market is hardly worth getting into now. You know, we have to figure out where this old 40% of our portfolio is now going to go.
Right.
So this, while this wine might not be for everyone, it is certainly for more people than it was 10 years ago. I would say,
look, if you've got $1 million, right, and not all of our listeners have $1 million. I know we've got listeners that have $10 million, though. We're probably all over the spectrum. We got people from, you know, $100 in their savings account all the way up, you know, beyond 10 million. But if you've got $1 million and I don't think it would be unreasonable to allocate 2.5%, 25 grand of that into something like a fine wine category.
I completely agree. Yeah,
but the problem is none of us really know anything about it.
Like, but that's okay.
Because there are resources out there that can help us to identify which wines are more likely to appreciate faster. Maybe there was a fire that devastated their vineyard or something like that, right? So we know that that's going to be more valuable in the future, right? So there are people out there who are wine connoisseurs, experts who can help us with this stuff. But guys, so I'm putting this in front of you. Obviously, no one can see this because we're just looking at it. But look at the difference in 2020s. This is just 1 year. Annual returns by portfolio size. All right. So if you had $1,000 to $5,000 invested in wine, your return for 2020 was 6.6%. It's probably because you drank it. I mean, you know, you got $2,000 worth of wine. There's a good chance that if I come home a little buzzed, you know, maybe I crack open a bottle, right? But as we go up the spectrum, let's go out to $50,000. If you're between 50 and basically $100,000, your return was 20% because you can diversify your holdings and you really have access to better research and better resources on how to allocate that chunk of your portfolio.
And you're not drinking your own wine.
Right. And that's part, like, there are services out there that will throw it in their temperature control. I wouldn't even know, in order for my wine to appreciate at the fastest rate possible, I don't even know what temperature to keep it at. 56 degrees, 58. Like, there are temperature controlled rooms. They will store it for you and they will let you know when it's time for you to sell that wine. Like, hey, this thing's up 112% over the last year. I don't think it's going to do that again. It's time to exit this position.
Right.
Very, very cool stuff. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah. And I know, just because some of my friends were talking about it, it's not just temperature, but it's also humidity. So if you want one of those rooms in your house, it's not just temperature control, but it's also humidity controlled. And so they cost like $75,000 up.
Yeah. See, I want that, but not for wine, for cigars. Yeah. I want a humidity, like a humidor room.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet because I'm all into cigars. It'd be cool if they like made cigars an alternative asset class. Like, that'd be kind of cool for me. I mean, that's what I'm into.
It is technically, right? If you want to be a cigar collector, Very, very, very interesting, though. I think the main takeaway here is the more money you can allocate to this, the better your resources are, the better your returns are. You know, you invest $1,000 into a fine wine, like it's kind of a crapshoot.
Right. I think also the big takeaway is these are long-term investments. Like these aren't things you day trade, right? It's not like you buy, you know, put money into fine wine and then sell it a month later. Like it's not what you do, right?
And you're definitely not going to sell it the next day because there is an illiquidity factor at play, right?
Well, and you're obviously paying somebody to store for you and all that kind of thing. So you're paying them a certain percentage.
Yep.
So you want to make sure you get the most out of it you can. Usually that's longevity, right?
Yep, exactly. Anything else we want to hit on as it relates to investing in collectibles? We barely touched on NFTs. We didn't touch that much on art.
Well, I think just real quick, talking about NFTs and the move to digital. I know we've talked about NFTs before, so I don't want to talk about too much. But the pivot online has been substantial. Sales have doubled essentially in the past year for like NFTs and digital art. You know, went from $6 billion in 2019 to $12.4 billion in 2020. Wow. And that's over 100% gain in 1 year. And through this year so far, I believe it's up to $4 billion already, $4 billion the first half of 2021. So I think there's a lot of potential in that digital art space, and it's growing. I mean, I think the point that everybody should take from this kind of topic is that you got to look outside of the traditional stocks, bonds, and even other alternatives like real estate, right? There's new things coming about that, you know, nobody's talking about. I think that's where you're going to see a lot of gains in the next 10, 15, 20 years as more people start to realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my, you know, I think we talked about my strategy on the Bitcoin and the Ethereum. Kind of dollar cost averaging into it. So if anyone tagged along with me this year, you probably made a lot of money. So if you're uncomfortable with the NFT space, I think the crypto space is, you know, still complicated to understand, but it's easier just to buy and let grow. The NFT space has challenges, you know, how to buy one, how not to get it stolen out of your wallet, what to buy, because the market is just flooded with all these JPEGs out there. But Luke's point is spot on. While you're saving, whatever you're saving for, you know, most people saving for retirement, you have to diversify the portfolio, and you need some diversification away from just stock market assets.
Good stuff. Any final thoughts?
I can't stop thinking about Luke's car in high school.
Yeah, I can't stop thinking about having a Mad Dog 2020 when I'm done doing this show.
I can't believe you called that correctly.
Running straight down to Quickie Mart. All right, everyone, thanks for tuning in as always. Make sure you catch us next week. If you have any questions, hit us up at info@swpconnect.com, and we'll talk to you next time.
The opinions expressed in the podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any investment, legal, financial, or tax strategy. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. Please consult a qualified professional about your individual needs.